The Hayes Advantage with Kathleen Hayes and Vonnie Quinn. On demand via our Bloomberg Radio Plus app. Free for iPhone and Android devices.
The Fed in Focus, brought to you by Commonwealth Financial Network, the broker-dealer RIA of choice for independent advisors dedicated to doing right by investors like you. Make your advisor a Commonwealth advisor. Visit commonwealth.com. Very happy to welcome back to the show Larry Goodman, president of the Center for Financial Stability. While I was out of the office last week, I know Vonnie Quinn lined up some terrific interviews at the conference Larry put together up at Bretton Woods to look at modern central banks, the Fed, and more. We want to get back to that topic with Larry. We also are welcoming back to the show Steve Matthews, Bloomberg News reporter on the U.S. economy team, specializing in all things related to the Fed, and co-author of a story today suggesting that Fed officials are wondering if it's time to change some very important words in their statements. So, Steve, let's start with you. What is the crux of the matter here for the Fed?
The crux of the matter is that the so-called quantitative easing program ends next month, the bond buying program. And the Fed, for the last 6 months, has been saying that rates will be low after bond buying ends for a considerable time. And now that we're getting to the end of the program, the tapering will end in October. There is a lot of discussion about the language, and is the language still meaningful and appropriate? And interestingly, the push to do away with this forward guidance has come from both sides of the Fed, from the so-called doves, who are more worried about the jobs and the fact that the employment market may still have a lot of slack, and the hawks, the people who are worried about inflation and or financial stability issues. So you have had in the last week, for example, Charles Plosser, who dissented at the last meeting, making a forceful case to remove the considerable time language. And at the same time, Eric Rosengren, who's a leading dove, the head of the Boston Fed, making essentially the same case that he's comfortable with changing the guidance. He doesn't feel like it's worthwhile anymore.
Steve, the phrase considerable period caused a lot of market frustration and a lot of market scratching its head from the moment it was used, really, right?
Yeah, and in fact, this is whether you would consider it a gaffe or an intentional statement. This was one of the more remarkable things that came out of Janet Yellen's first press conference when she was asked about what is meant by a considerable period of time. And she said, it could be maybe 6 months or it could mean something else. It could, I wouldn't pay too much attention to a time frame. It's all data dependent. And people latched on, Wall Street latched on to the 6 months phrase, and a lot of people instantly read that, okay, that means that rates could go up in 6 months, exactly 6 months after bond buying ends, which would be March. So
that is certainly why this has been hotly contested from the very beginning. Larry Goodman, weigh in here, because you did have this very high-profile monetary policy conference up at Bretton Woods. What was the debate like there on this topic?
Well, I think the debate was pretty forceful, and I think that Steve's piece this morning was excellent because it really highlights how right now the Fed is in a bit of a pickle. It also highlights how the Fed has changed its course many times over the last few years, and that has left many with a confused state, and it has also led to pretty significant imbalances in financial markets. Prices are distorted in multiple different areas. So this issue was hotly contested in many of the different sections that were held in panels and discussions. There was a constant refrain regarding rules versus discretion. So the movement today, and specifically the story, is well-timed.
Larry, when you say that there are imbalances due to price distortions, Where are they most recently, and has it to do with the considerable time phrase or the idea that there's going to be a period of time after purchases end and hiking begins?
Well, I think it's multi-pronged, Vani. I think that it's in part due to Fed policy. Fed policy has been based upon expectations about expectations, in contrast to very clear movements of the economy in days past. So there are substantial questions about the Fed and the conduct of monetary policy more broadly throughout the world. The other area relates to international imbalances that have grown quite dramatically in recent years, whether it's the pace of reserve builds in China or whether it's the fact that the United States is still hanging out there with a large current account deficit despite the fact that we're demonstrating subpar growth. So there are distortions both domestically as well as internationally.
So, Steve, your story points out a couple of prominent voices saying any kind of change in wording is going to be taken almost like a change in policy, could hit the markets. This is a concern of the Fed?
Yeah, you know, in some ways, this is less of a hawk-dove debate and more of a debate among the academics who are very much into the monetary theory. And monetary theory would say that you shouldn't make calendar promises. There's been a lot of objection to, you know, oh, we're going to hold policy this way until a specific date. And on the other hand, and so, you know, people like Rosengren and Jim Bullard have argued very much against calendar type of the dates. On the other hand, you have the pragmatists who are worried that this is going to cause volatility.
Okay. Steve, you're beginning to sound like an economist on the one hand. On the other hand, what... I mean, we talked last year a lot about what it would mean for emerging markets if the Fed were to do something, if it were to change its language, its guidance, its whatever it may be. What was the consensus this time around? Are we going to see a scare like we did at the beginning of the year?
Well, I think that there was more consensus than ever that policies have unintended consequences and spillover effects. The delegates at Bretton Woods spent an enormous amount of time thinking about the interconnectedness among markets, and certainly the emerging markets were in sight both upon their reaction in financial markets to their role within the IMF and the World Bank. The conference was unequivocally focused on the future and the long term rather than quick market movements. That said, there was a profound appreciation for the instability and lopsided positions that have taken place in multiple markets, such as the emerging markets. We've already seen currencies in the emerging markets come off somewhat based upon the run-up in the value of the dollar. And we're also seeing, based upon the complex of easy monetary policy around the world, we're seeing lopsided positions. We're seeing traders piling into positions, long dollar, short euro, almost at an all-time high. It's driving down volatility, whether it's the VIX or whether it's the euro-dollar three-month realized vol. So we are seeing profound changes in markets, and certainly emerging markets will be impacted by a change in the monetary policy within the major central banks around the world.
Steve, I want to come back to the point you were making earlier in this conversation about how this isn't your traditional hawk-dove debate at the Fed about removing the considerable period of time language. It's more like among academics, some who say that they're really into the forward guidance and it works. Is that your point? Versus academics who say, no, this is a bad thing to do. How did you break that down?
I think that the academic case is that you don't set policy based on a calendar date. And to the extent that the language about considerable time has been interpreted to mean, you know, you can read it as 3 months, 6 months,
sure,
9 months, whatever, that seems to commit that policy is going to be a certain way regardless of the
So
conditions.
Who's on the other side of that debate from the academics? Is it a different breed of academic, a different school of thought, or is it a different grouping?
I think most everyone, you know, would agree academically that it makes sense to remove the language. I think the problem is the pragmatists at the Fed are worried that if you remove it in a way that's kind of clunky, that you could cause market volatility. So that you remove it, investors could react badly. You could have a spike up in rates. You could have a big sell-off in markets because people think, okay, the Fed's moving to tightening when they're changing the language for more theory reasons.
So what do you think, Larry? Are we going to get a spike in rates, and where would it be? Would it necessarily be in the U.S.?
Well, I think we should take a step back, Vonnie, and ask Steve the question, how did we get there in the first place? We're making a change immediately in Fed policy after three shifts in calendar guidance or various forms of forward guidance. So how do we get there in the first place? Our perspective is trying to outline policies that are going to be more durable over the long term. But yes, in direct answer to your question, a change on the margin of liquidity will unequivocally have an impact on markets. You know, just before the taper tantrum, we had rates as low as 1.4% on the 10-year Treasury. And then just before the change was made, many were saying, well, it's already baked into expectations. And that was well back when rates were 1.6% on the 10-year. So now we're around 2.5%. To be sure, a shift on the margin in Fed policy can have an impact on Treasuries, and that can certainly reverberate throughout various financial markets, whether it's emerging markets or even how vol is priced.
So, Steve, hop in there. Perhaps you've got a comment or a question for Larry.
Yeah, what do you... there's been a lot of talk about rules versus discretion at the Fed and whether the Fed should be adopting a monetary rule. Congress has gotten involved. What's your view on that, and does that matter for the outlook for policy?
Well, I think that the issue matters more than ever today, and one of the most profound discussions that we had up at Bretton Woods was just how this issue, an idea of rules versus discretion, is permeating through not only monetary policy, but also the issue of sovereign debt restructuring. You know, take a look at Greece. Before the Great Crisis, debt to GDP was 130%. Now it's 170%. When do you restructure a debt? How do you restructure a debt? And the idea now is that there's been a migration of debt from the emerging markets to the advanced economy. So if there's an uncomfortable restructuring in a major advanced economy, that will unequivocally unleash massive systemic risk. So the idea of rules versus discretion is an important one throughout the international financial landscape now, and that really dominated almost every discussion that we had, whether it was regarding the international monetary system, and John Taylor came up with a very interesting idea called a near internationally equivalent cooperating equivalent, a NICE rule, towards sovereign debt and the management of the World Bank and the IMF.
Well, that's kind of fascinating. Steve, come in on that. A new potential standard for collaboration maybe? Well, not collaboration, but at least...
Yeah, the international component is really interesting in all this because, of course, you see the ECB now moving into quantitative easing.
Exactly.
And, you know, you wondered, you know, Larry, does this cause a problem now that the Fed is moving into presumably a tightening phase with the ECB going in the opposite direction? Does that bring, you know, about some kind of volatility globally and does all that call for some kind of international cooperation?
Right. Yes, and possibly. It certainly is a cause for concern in financial markets, and that's one of the reasons why we've seen the five big figure plus drop in euro dollar. and that is the divergent policy thrust of each respective central bank. And that's set to continue. It's also leading to distortions and skews in positions, and also leading to this sympathetic reaction in the pricing of vol, which will definitely start to reverse, and it clearly remains an issue for the future.
But that's
now,
healthy, though, in a way, isn't it, Larry? I mean, you said a moment ago how distorted markets were and pricing. Isn't it healthy that we do start to get some volatility, and whether it be through the currency markets or emerging markets, will it eventually mean that things will be adequately priced and correctly priced?
Absolutely, Vani. It just depends how you get there, right? If you get there smoothly and steadily over time, that's a better dynamic path than one that is sharp, gyrating, and interrupted. You know, you're even looking at euro-dollar now at roughly 129, and you're hitting important support. So you could readily see positions reverse quickly. So it really depends upon the path regarding how you get there.
Okay, so as we look though at where the Fed is going, and if we read the tea leaves and the signals, if there is seems to be more and more agreement, Steve, as your piece co-reported and written with Jeff Kearns and Chris Condon, also Bloomberg News, are we getting some very subtle signals, including from Janet Yellen in maybe even in her speech in Jackson Hole, that even if she's not gotten hawkish, that maybe she's a little less dovish, a little more willing to make this move? Is that what the markets and investors should be taking away from this?
Well, I think if you read the Jackson Hole speech carefully, it's fairly even-handed. I mean, she lays out the fact that the labor market has improved quite a bit, that she's not happy with where things are right now, but that she acknowledges that there's been a lot of progress. And, you know, I think it was Jim Bullard the other day, it may have been in an interview with you, Kathleen, was pointing out that at one point Ben Bernanke was saying QE would end with the unemployment rate at 7%. And I think it was like over this past summer was his forecast at one point at a press conference. Instead, we've got QE ending a little bit later, but in the same basic time frame with the unemployment rate at 6.1%. Mm-hmm. So it's like it's clear things are getting better faster than what they had expected, which is one reason why the next week when the statement comes out, you know, you ought to pay a lot of attention to the summary of economic projections, the forecast. That could be the big driver next week.
Sure, because if people are seeing a somewhat stronger economy, lower unemployment faster. Larry, what is your prediction for next week? Will the considerable period of time be dropped? What about the projections and what we're going to see? The markets are definitely going to be primed to move one direction or another if they have to.
Right. They will probably drop the language. There is the need to make a change. I would just say, Kathleen, that this type of policy making does contrast with the way that people thought about policy many years ago regarding a longer-term vision and strategy. And we're tied from meeting to meeting, whereas longer ago there were benchmarks and hurdles and thresholds. So next week's action is certainly going to represent a stark contrast to how policy was previously formulated, which we're trying to get back to that kind of thinking regarding long-term policies and a clear understanding of what potential unintended consequences and spillover effects are.
Lawrence Goodman, thanks so much. President, Center for Financial Stability, and our own Steve Matthews of our Bloomberg News Economy and Fed team. Terrific conversation, Bonnie.
That was just wonderful.
The Hayes Advantage, weekdays at 10 a.m. Eastern, in New York on Bloomberg 1130, in Boston on 1200 a.m. and 94.5 FM HD2, or on Sirius XM Satellite Radio Channel 119. Copyright 2014, Bloomberg LP.